from the guilty pleasures.
Kylie Jenner to the foyer. I have a little surprise for you.
Some chicken!
To the thrill of the rose.
This is the tough part. Unfortunately, there's going to have to be people that go home tonight.
And the jaw-dropping scandals.
You know, I wasted everyone's money. I wasted everyone's everything, and I feel bad.
I cheated on
two in one weekend.
Welcome to Watch With Us.
Watch With Us.
An inside look into your favorite TV shows, which delivers the latest TV news that you want to know about. Here's your host,
ladies and gentlemen,
Us Weekly's Emily Longaretta.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Watch With Us podcast. I am your host, Emily Longaretta, and this week we are going to be joined by an awesome guest. But first, we have to run down some of the biggest TV news of the week, which of course is the Emmy nominations. We can't have a TV podcast without talking about the Emmys. So we're going to start off with, I'm just going to give some highlights. I know you guys can read the whole list. I know you've seen it all over social media. We wrote up some snubs and surprises on usmagazine.com, so you can check out that as well. But this actually, I wanted to run down a little bit of by the numbers and some surprises, starting off with Watchmen being the most nominated show this year with 26 nods, which is incredible. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel comes in second with 20, and Ozark and Succession tied with 18 each. When it comes to the networks, Netflix blew everyone else away, 160 nominations. HBO followed along with 107, NBC 47, ABC 36, and FX 33. I think for anyone who is in the industry or just watches a lot of TV, we all know that the streaming services and cable are really taking over, and this just proves that completely. It's very interesting to see, and I assume that's a trend that, you know, it started a few years ago, and it's just continuing to do more and more every year, it seems. A few surprises I want to highlight, starting out with an amazing surprise would be Zendaya, because she was nominated for her role in Euphoria. While the show wasn't nominated, which I was surprised about, she was nominated, and it shows how far she has come in her career, and it's so incredible. If you haven't seen her reaction on her Instagram, go ahead and check that out, because it's definitely something really sweet that she wrote about how shocked she was as well. Schitt's Creek, it got 15 nominations, which the show, you know, critics kind of slept on the show for a long time, and it's awesome to see that it's getting recognized at the end. Really, really great to see. It's pretty much honored in all the main categories. So 15 nominations, that's awesome. And it's a pop TV show, which of course a lot of the popularity has come from Netflix, but it is a pop TV show. So that's really awesome to see. While the show Rami was not nominated, which I was bummed about, star Rami Youssef was nominated and he has been really crushing it. I have been recommended this show by multiple different TV critics, and I will say it is worth the time. So if you can check out Rami, do yourself a favor and check that out. While Big Little Lies, Little Fires Everywhere, and The Morning Show got some recognition in the nominees, Reese Witherspoon did not. And, you know, with three giant shows and her being a lead in all three of those shows, her not getting the nomination was pretty surprising, I will say, especially because a lot of her counterparts did. Jennifer Aniston was nominated, Kerry Washington was nominated, Laura Dern and Meryl Streep were nominated for Big Little Lies. Of course, that's a big ensemble, so it's a little different, but regardless, I think it was very surprising to a lot of people in the industry that Reese was not on the list. Another snub that I would say I was probably the most upset about was Merritt Weaver and Caitlin Dever from Unbelievable. Neither of them were nominated, while the show was, which the show deserves. The two of them, to me, are just as, if not more important than the show being nominated. So Better Call Saul, in the same vein, was also nominated, but no Bob Odenkirk, and even more surprising, no Rhea Seehorn. She's been snubbed year after year, and it seems a little silly at this point. I don't really understand it. In the same Breaking Bad kind of world, El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, was of course nominated, but Aaron Paul was not. Well, that's not as surprising, just because he's, you know, been nominated so many times in the past for Breaking Bad. It's still surprising. It's still a little bit, you know, if you were reading the experts' expectations for this, and if you've watched the movie, and if you've seen some of the other things that were nominated, it just comes as a bit of a surprise here. And then, you know, the other one that everyone is talking about is Elizabeth Moss, because yes, The Handmaid's Tale received nominations. Of course it did. It's going to for as long as it's on, because let's be honest, it's a very, very well-made show. But the show wouldn't be what it is without Elizabeth Moss. So it almost seems silly to me that she wasn't nominated. In the same vein, there is obviously a ton of very talented actresses out there that were recognized, so that's awesome, but you know, it's a little bit of a letdown. So, all right, guys, next up, I want to dive into an interview. We spoke to the new host of The Soup, which is on E! Now. You know, obviously, the show took a little bit of a break due to the coronavirus pandemic, but it is back and better than ever. So without further ado, here is that interview. Jade Cataprada, thank you so much for joining.
Pow, 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 pow. What's up? I drank too much tea.
I love it. I love it. How are you holding up? I know it's an awkward time, so I like to ask everyone how they're handling things.
You know, I think that everybody feels the collective anxiety and the everybody's pain that, you know, everybody's going through it right now. But, you know, it's exciting to get back into the studio and hopefully create something that can alleviate a little bit of pain for people. And it can be like a little place when people can, you know, go laugh and giggle and kind of forget everything that's going on right now. So that's been a nice shift for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I want to start out kind of see, when did you guys kind of like pause filming? And then when did you resume? Were there conversations about possibly like doing it from home? Like, what was that process like?
We went through the whole thing. So March 16th, I think we were supposed to film our 6th episode. And I was like really getting in the groove. I was like, yeah, nothing can stop us. And then I was like, oh, everything has. And at first we tried to do these kind of little sips of soup from our house. But, you know, unlike any other commentary show, it's, you know, it's a scripted show, and there's a lot of thought that's being put into each clip and the things that I say. And we want to kind of create a bigger universe, unlike all the older soups. And so we decided to wait until we could get back into the studio after we did a few of those. And we did a test show a couple weeks ago, and then we were paused again. And then we just resumed the week before last. So yesterday we just filmed our 2nd episode and it's coming out tonight. So I'm really psyched. The first one I was feeling a bit rusty, not going to lie, but I was like, can I tell a joke? Can I remember? And I'm also telling jokes to no one. It's a completely empty studio. So
I was going to say it must be a little bit different setup wise that you're just like talking to just the air.
Yeah. I have to admit I've done sets where it's been pretty quiet, but nothing has been this quiet. But it's nice, you know, you kind of figure out a way of how to kind of adjust and land things a little bit differently. And honestly, it's just finding a way to connect to people who are watching. If you think about it, it's just, you know, people are watching on their phones. And so it's nice to kind of feel that intimacy where I am really just talking to one person in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I want to roll it back a little bit to how you kind of got your start in this and then how The Soup kind of came about to you, because you've obviously been doing stand up and doing that stuff for a long time. But how did you kind of get your feet wet when it came to joining the show?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I've been doing stand up for about 12 years in LA, just, you know, grinding it out and doing every little crappy show I could do. And then I got really lucky because I did another show, another pilot with Michael Goldman and Nick Cannon a while ago. And I was kind of just in, you know, in E's radar because of it. So I felt really lucky because I kind of had this pilot as my audition. It was a similar kind of setup where, you know, where we're talking to celebrities and we're kind of making fun of their social media feeds. So it was kind of in that same realm. And I was kind of on E's radar already from doing, you know, like some green screen shows. And it was one of those things where it was like the right place at the right time, which, you know, only took 12 years. So, hey guys, don't get into comedy. No. Yeah. So that was kind of the process. It was actually pretty effortless, like considering all the tests that I've gone through in my lifetime and all the auditions. This one was, they made it pretty breezy for me. So I was lucky for that.
Yeah, absolutely. When did you move to LA?
So I moved to LA in 2008. I went to Emerson, which is like a musical theater type of school. And I did an internship here that you do like an abroad program. And my very first job was at this place, National Lampoon. I don't know. It's like used to be an old institution, but people don't know it as much. But I hosted a show for them right when I got to LA. I got very lucky. And from then on, I just kind of caught the comedy bug. I met some comedy people there. And from there on, it just kind of, you know, once you catch it, it's hard. Yeah. You're kind of always chasing the dragon after that.
Right. Totally. I feel like we are in such an interesting time, obviously with COVID and everything that's going on there, but also in a time for women, for,
you know, every person of color finally getting some, you know, the attention that they should always be getting, that, mm-hmm. you know, being in the front lines of things. How important is that for you to make that be part of your show as well? Because I feel like that's something that's always been part of your life.
Yeah, it's incredibly important to me. Like, I've never been that kind of female comic that's like, I'm a female and I do comedy. But, you know, I view the world differently as a cisgender man. I'm open about my sexuality. I'm extremely open about my nationality as well. I wasn't born and raised in America. And yeah, I want the show to kind of be inclusive. I don't really want to poke fun. That's never really been my type of comedy, where I kind of put people down. And so in a weird way, like with comedy, I kind of want to like bring people up, and I want people to feel included in the joke. And like I mentioned before, I wanted to feel like a little escape, you know? And so this show has really helped me to kind of do that, where I can really fully be myself. I'm talking about reality TV, which is something I personally love. And I want people to kind of love it too. I want it to be a place where people who love TV watch, and also people who don't know anything about TV watch, and they also feel included.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I've spoken to a couple different comedians about this, that it seems that being a comedian is difficult a lot in these high stress times, because a lot of people, you know, are careful not to make certain jokes, and you don't want to be insensitive. But the show is also about poking fun in the best way, like in a complete respectful way. Have you kind of had to juggle that, or has it been pretty easy for you to not be like, oh, I'm good not being offensive to people?
You know, yeah, like of course there's those little moments where like, oh, that's not gonna roll. You know, and we all have to be a little more sensitive. Obviously, it's sensitive times, but like, I feel like, yeah, I've never really had to do that, because my comedy has never really been like roast comedy. Right. Just because myself, I can hash it, but I can never really take it. If someone's like, you're ugly, I'm like, what? So I think that it's been easy just because that's not really my style of comedy. Like, I really love to kind of twist it in a way where it's like a positive kind of funny, rather than like putting somebody down.
Totally. Which is interesting, because The Soup, I mean, for a long time, a lot of people think of The Soup as like a show that just strictly like makes fun of shows, which is really, and I even spoke to Joel McHale about this years ago, that it's really about like showing how freaking amazing these reality shows are and how hysterical they are.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see it as kind of like low brow or whatever, you know, it's like low rent. We made fun of it this week as that way. But I actually think it's an incredible experiment, like in people watching and kind of what happens to people when they're put under these situations. It's a bit voyeuristic in a weird way, but I really do find it just like an interesting experiment of personalities combining, and, you know, and kind of what happens when people get in front of the camera when they're being watched, and how they kind of assimilate themselves to the situation. So I think that there is another layer to it that people kind of never talk about.
Absolutely. And what I know you obviously watch a lot of reality TV, even before you had this job, you liked reality TV. So
yeah.
What shows, are there like a line between like, oh, okay, we can't talk about this show every week, but I love this, so I'm just going to try to put it in there every week. Like, do you have those kind of shows?
I mean, they cannot make The Real Housewives fast enough lately. Like the New York, I'm sorry, I don't want to give anything away. Obviously people watch it, but when Sonia was stomping on that mirror at Ramona's party, I was literally running around my house hysterically laughing. I like couldn't even keep it inside. I was like, this is too good. They can't make those fast enough. And then actually there's a new show called Love on the Spectrum that I just binged. I don't know. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have actually. And it's so something so different good. And so good. Yeah.
It's so beautiful, because you think about how awkward dating is for somebody who doesn't even have a disability, mm-hmm. and how that can, you know, add so much more stress and awkwardness to dates. And of course I don't want to make fun of anybody with a disability, but I love like how they come together and kind of find each other in this crazy world, and and the couples are just so sweet. And so, you know, there are some shows that like will never make it on the show that I obsess and make everybody on the set watch as well. And that's definitely one of them.
Do your friends and family laugh at how much TV you watch? Is it to the point where it's like become your life, or are you completely like you have other things going on so they don't? Because I feel like for me, even my family laughs at me because it's my job. So I do watch a lot, but I also enjoy it. So I'm curious how that is for you.
Well, I have to say quarantine's like been a great excuse. I'm like, you guys, I'm sorry, I can't leave the house. They're like, you would be doing this anyway. And I'm like, well, I would. No, I think I've kind of become like my friend's go-to for like, what are you watching? And
yeah,
a lot of my friends are avid TV watchers as well and reality TV watchers as well. So like, I think it's just, it's good material to trade. And I'm always looking for more stuff to watch. The more obscure, the better. Like I just binged Instant Hotel. I don't know if you've seen that one.
No, I haven't watched that.
I have a small obsession with Australian accents. So it's this Australian show where different people have like Airbnbs and they have to stay at each Airbnb and rate them.
That's incredible.
And so I love stuff like that where you get to see inside people's units. I'm like, what's it look like inside your house? Yeah, I just really enjoy it. And I feel like I can't believe I'm getting paid to do it, really.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's like, it's the dream. I mean, it's really is able to watch that kind of stuff. Is there anything off limits when it comes to your comedy?
Yeah, I really don't like making people feel like shit. Honestly, it's never been my style. Like, I remember watching comedy really early on. I was like in San Francisco, and every joke was like putting women down. Like, I honestly felt like every joke, and I kind of started to get drunk a little bit, and I heckled. Don't tell any of my comic friends. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I just felt so unrepresented. I really honestly did. I was like, it felt so uneven. Like every joke was always about the same kind of people being made fun of. And so I kind of like hoped, I don't want people to feel that way when they watch it. I don't want them to be nervous that I'm going to talk to them. I want people to want to feel included. Like they're in on the joke, even if it's like maybe putting something down.
Right.
It always kind of has that little bit of a positive spin to it, because that's just like what I like to watch. Like, I don't want to feel like shit when I'm trying to laugh, you know?
Totally. Yeah. What comedians do you watch? Do you watch a lot of stand-up? Because I feel like every comic has like a different opinion on like watching stand-up. Like some love it, some are against it.
I don't really, I have to admit, like I don't love watching stand-up. Like, you know, I'll see the big specials. Like I watch Chappelle and Bill and all the big guys. And because you have to check it out, they're just all brilliant. But I tend to not want to, because I don't want to have an idea that's just like a little idea. And then I see somebody do something, a similar subject, and me feel like I can't talk about it. So a little bit of that. And then I just kind of feel like a little bit of anxiety when I watch it. I'm like, oh, like, I don't know what it is. I'm like a stage mom. But yeah, so I don't watch that much stand-up, but I do watch like a lot of like, if somebody made a scripted show that's like a fellow friend, I'll definitely check it out.
Nice. Do you feel like, I feel like in the world of comics, it used to be all men, and it still is a lot of men. I mean, percentage wise, there's still a ton. Do you feel like they're in a way like you kind of got to break through that mold, and you feel lucky to be able to do that? Because I assume it wasn't easy when the room is 90% men.
Yeah, you know, it was never easy, but I was like, you know, I have to, you know, there's the good things and the bad things about being part of the boys club, you know? I think that like I started at the Comedy Store, and so it was mostly men surrounded by me. And I, you know, I worked really hard. I always wanted kind of like all their respect and adoration. I just wanted to be like one of the guys. And then slowly with time, I started to find my own voice and started to realize that's not my audience. And I just wanted to kind of engage the people that wanted to hear the things that I wanted to truly say versus kind of wanting to be more like the guys. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's helped me over time. I mean, I think funny is funny. If you're undeniably funny, it doesn't matter your color, your gender, your kind of comedy. You know, I think it's just you're universally relatable in that way. And that's what I hope to be. You know, I don't really want to be like a female comic or like a Brazilian. I just wanted to be like, oh, she's crazy. She's funny.
She just makes me laugh. That's all I want. So yeah, like, absolutely. All right. So before we wrap up, besides The Housewives, I know you said that must watch reality TV for someone who is not really into reality TV. Because I will say, we talk a lot about reality TV on this podcast because I'm a junkie. I'm into a lot of the competition series because I just love it.
Oh, like what? But what do you like? What do you got? What do you do?
I watch like The Challenge and Survivor and Big Brother and all these, like, it's taken over my life. So
do you watch like American Ninja Warrior types as well? I love American Ninja Warrior.
Titan
I love it.
Games now I'm into. It's just all ridiculous. But I'm curious, what is your like go-to when people ask you for a reality show to watch?
I think that it's a whole brand of thing that if you haven't gotten into it, RuPaul's Drag Race is just, it's gold. It's comedic, it's flashy, it's funny, like in a weird way that is a very like, you know, insular to that world. It's also introducing you to a whole new culture that people don't know about. And if you haven't seen RuPaul's Drag Race, first watch Paris is Burning, which is this documentary about the ballroom scene, which is a lot of drag queens like derive their language and their whole culture from it. So I watched that. And then Legendary is another great one, which is another kind of like, you know, perpendicular show to that. And then, oh my God, like there's so many. Anything TLC really has just been gold. You know, the 90 Day Fiance. I think there's 10 different spinoffs now.
Yeah. They have.
I didn't understand.
Every possible person on 90 Day Fiance is getting a spinoff.
Very addicted to it. Just careful. And then Love Island UK, I've lost months of life to it. Like, and then when the show ends, I feel empty. Like, wait, I miss them. What are they up to? I'm like looking at their Instagram and stuff. It's very
bizarre.
That's
my thing is I go into like an Instagram hole after Me for like too. Hours of like, are they, who's still friends? Who's still talking? Oh, it's sick.
I know it really is. But that's kind of part of why you love it too, because there are these real people. You know right. what I mean? It's not just like a person. It's not flat. It's like a four-dimensional person. It's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Jade, thank you so much for joining. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. I am so happy that the show is back on. I was missing it.
Thanks. Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks. I have a picture of Jen and Haley and Ryan and I from the TCA. So it was like right before I met you. So
such a good time. We closed down the party.
It feels like so long ago.
Will we ever have a TCA again? I guess we'll see.
I know. What month was that in?
December or January?
Oh my gosh.
January.
It feels like so long ago. That's crazy. It was just January.
Wild.
Yeah, but thank you so much. Obviously, I love Us Weekly, so I'm so psyched to be a part. It's so cool.
Thank you, Jade. Take care. Stay safe.
Thanks, dude. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, guys, as always, I want to wrap up with a few shout outs, starting with Woman of the Week. I know I mentioned it earlier, but I have to give a call out to Zendaya from Euphoria. I interviewed her back in the day when she was on Disney Channel, and then I interviewed her again for Spider-Man, and then again for Euphoria. So it's really, really cool to see how much her career has changed over the years and how incredible of an actress she is. So that's definitely my Woman of the Week. For Woman to Watch, I have to say Beyoncé, because Black is King drops on Disney Plus on Friday. It's her visual album, which is 85 minutes long. I will say, I read this morning that a lot of people are saying this could do for Disney Plus the same kind of impact that Hamilton has when it comes to people subscribing and watching and really, you know, checking out something completely different. I would have to agree. So that is definitely something I would recommend. And last up, we have Umbrella Academy under What to Watch. Season 2 drops on Netflix. If you loved season 1, like I know many of you did, season 2 is definitely worth checking out. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope all of you are staying safe and staying sane during this time. Let me know on social media what you're watching at Emily Longaretta. I would love to hear from you. Also, if you love us, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Let us know in the comments what you are watching, what you want to hear more of, what you think. I love to read your feedback. As always, guys, thank you so much.